This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Steve, I put the old production hat on.
Was that you? So truly proving that anybody, Dan Shike, can do this?
Oh, for God's sake. You know what I bet? I bet Dan Shike heard that right there and got so mad he overbuilt another garage band.
That was Tony in Lansing.
Yeah, you know.
Our good buddy, Tony in Lansing.
You know, Fozzie and the Wet Blankets just got 10% higher on their bill from Shike the Music Man, because Tony Rodabaugh did a far superior job than he's probably doing. That's right. Check them out. Fozzie
and
in the
wet
blankets. Getting their music clicked and buttoned by Dan Shike probably right now.
They're playing down in the cellar next week.
Fozzie and the Wet Blankets seems like a place who's playing at a pizzeria.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, there's no question
that pull this microphone right out. I mean, big surprise. Yeah. Actually, the mic stand hasn't been an issue for quite a while.
No, it hasn't. But. Yeah, I mean, since you angrily started drilling mid-podcast, that has been solved. You know, speaking of Tony Rodabaugh, and I apologize if I'm pronouncing that wrong, but I think I got it.
Yeah. Rodabaugh?
He did send us a message, and I haven't replied because that's the kind of the way we handle personal messages around here.
We beg for interaction and then ignore anyone who gives us that interaction.
Precisely. Send us a message. Wants us, Steve, to be on his show.
Oh, nice.
Now, I may be violating some form of trust because I believe the message he had sent us refers to us as some type of special guest, and that can't be the correct terminology when describing having us on.
I don't know. I mean, look, it's his show. He can describe us however he wants.
Hero, but here's
look,
the thing.
Hero, he might throw that word out
sure.
there.
But is there anything?
Inspiration, role model?
Inspiration.
These are just words that Tony could use to describe us.
Inspiration seems assured that's what he's using to describe us. I mean, he has his own podcast. So at this point, anybody who has started a podcast after June of 2016... you and I can lay some form of claim to being an inspiration.
I mean, we got seniority.
So you're welcome, Tony, for providing that for you. But yeah, he wants us to be on his show at the end of next month. So we'll see if we can make something that happen.
He just started his show and he's already booking
25.
He's already booking a month and a half out or five weeks out.
So here's the issue, though, is if he's advertising for his show, quote unquote, special guests or whatever, surprise guests, however you want to
refer
to it.
Heroes again, you know, like we said.
If he has friends or whoever listening to that thing, which again is already better than anything Shike's put together in years.
Suck it, Shike.
I feel like if I ever meet Dan in the flesh, it's going to be the man, I'm sorry. Like, most
him
of
him to you or
no,
you
me
to him,
him
okay,
because
I was gonna say, I'm
assuming he's a violent man. Rage filled.
Well, he's in the music industry, but not in like the cool way.
Right. Yeah. He's not hanging with the bands. You know,
he's not Metallica. He's the guy who pushes the button for the Metallica cover band.
Here's who's cooler in the music industry than Shike. And just as a preface, we got into this by saying I would apologize to him if I saw him.
Right. If you saw him.
If, and that'll never happen. The guy who, when the, you know, the stage goes dark for even a few moments, Steve, and he, like the lead singer is either sitting on a stool or maybe he's making the rounds. A big song just got done. And then all of a sudden the screen's dark and you see the silhouette of some idiot jog onto the stage and switch the guitars that are in the stands.
So he's now a roadie.
No, no. That guy's cooler than what Shike does.
Okay.
I mean, no offense, but they're actually seeing the band.
No offense at all. You're getting, look, you didn't have enough time to claim offense.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah. I mean, Shike's sitting there getting MP3s every month from a manager, whereas that guy is at least, you know, smelling the musk of the lead singer on stage. But we digress.
Yeah.
Tony asked us to be on his show.
I love it. I'm looking forward to it. I don't know what his podcast is about, but I'm in.
Would there be a bigger disappointment, though, advertising to whatever his listening audience is? You know, special surprise guests, and then it's just your and I faces appearing on the on like the Zoom or whatever. Hey. And everybody's just staring back because in what universe would they know who we are?
Right. Well, I think it's all in the way that he builds us up.
Right.
It's all in the way that he announces it. Because he needs to make sure people know we're not people that they should know.
Do we have a writer for our virtual appearances?
Mm.
Should we?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what we could ask for.
At least six mentions of our, you know, podcast specific social media, website, whatever.
I would actually request that for that week you change the title to the Steve and Kyle Podcast Presents, you know, the Tony Rotabaugh Podcast. I think that's only fair.
Yeah. I think that's pretty pretty standard operating procedure.
But the Steve and Kyle tour around the podcast industry continues.
Mm-hmm.
We have an appearance some point in the next 2 weeks, I believe, with our friends Brian and Chrissy.
We do, yeah.
From the commercial break.
Yep.
And we'll be, listen, to show that we mean business, we're going out of our way to do that. You know, that's not a regularly scheduled record date or time.
It's going to be like a Tuesday.
Yeah. I'm going to be in my bank gear.
Speaking of which, right now, it is Sunday, July 25th, 2021, the year of our Lord. It's the Steve and Kyle Podcast. It is.
Well, yeah, mention the time, too.
It's 7:40 p.m.
Ridiculous.
Right now. It's 7:40 p.m., but for a good reason. Now, I was I was out of town yesterday and the first half of today, so I got back to the house around 3:30, 4 o'clock, and we were planning on just recording then, but I saw a friend of mine post on Facebook that he's in Tokyo.
Sure.
He is in Tokyo for the Olympics,
which is one of the coolest things to know someone there. To me, that doesn't interest me to be involved because, well, at least this year, it's such a nightmare, just such a nightmare with what they have to do from what I've heard. And that doesn't seem fun, you know?
Yeah. So he's over there. Now he's been to the Olympics. I think he said this is his fifth Olympics.
So fifth Olympics. Yeah. So is he strictly involved with the Summer Olympics, meaning he's been going for 20 years?
No, he's been to the Winter Olympics.
Okay.
I know he did some. He does. Now, I'm going to be interested to find out exactly. I know that he works somehow with the U.S. water polo team.
Sure.
And he's a play-by-play guy. He's called a ton of different events. I sent you the list of all the different. He does basketball and football play-by-play as well, but he's over there. So originally I thought, oh, I wonder if Greg is calling water polo matches again. So I messaged him. He said, no, he's not doing it this time. He's doing more like basically like press work for the water polo team.
Gotcha.
But I was like, man, it would be cool to have him on.
Yeah.
I think it would be really cool to get the perspective of any Olympics, this is the one.
Someone on the ground.
Where it's going to be completely different, I would assume, than...
What do you think? Yeah, you think you can get one of the water polo players for us?
Yeah. I mean, he could literally point at anyone in the room and say, hey, you want to be a water polo player?
I mean, I feel like I'm ready to go if you can give me just a few seconds, Steve, here as I type in, how do you play water polo?
I think that I'm all good. I think that'll be one of the main questions is
how do you play water polo?
Well, that how does he? Because he is somebody who I went to college with Greg Meskel, and as far as I know, Greg wasn't big into water polo back in college.
So he just like this is a transformation.
I believe that I have no idea if he has since taken up playing water polo,
sure,
or if this is just one of those things where he used his skill set, kind of adapted it to a sport that he didn't necessarily know or was familiar with.
Yeah.
But he's like the go-to guy for water polo play-by-play.
Sorry, I'm going through the roster. Any one of these dudes could murder me.
I believe he's primarily, I know that he does a lot of work specifically with the women's water polo team.
Okay, I just pulled up the men. Mm-hmm. 6'5", 220, 6'4", 225, 6'6", 245. Imagine swimming towards that behemoth.
No.
And thinking, yeah, I'll swim right past him.
Yeah, I'm going to be asking Greg the very bare... By the way, the reason I'm saying this is we're going to be talking to him in about 15 minutes. I thought that it would be a great opportunity. We had somebody that we were going to talk to today, but then with our scheduling changing, we had to push that back.
Correct.
So I thought I love talking to people that I know, but this is something, I mean, he's on the world stage right now over in Tokyo.
Sure.
So I got a million different questions for him.
Now I'm getting real self-centered here before we even talk to him.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think the odds are we can get some of those, some trinkets back that he'd mail us?
I mean, I'm sure he could.
I mean, I don't know what they hand out. I'm just assuming.
I want a press pass.
I don't even want that. Here's what I want.
Lanyard.
So for years, these stories have been legend in an Olympic village or whatever. I think it was Brazil, 2012. May have been 16. I don't know. Where they handed out, I think it was like a 500,000 condoms.
Oh, yeah. Something insane.
Can we just get one?
Yeah.
Does it have like the Team USA logo on it? Or like the Olympic rings? And we're just going to put it on our, you know, it's eventually for the merch table.
It's going.
Or for the you know, table of honor, or the shelf of honor.
Our curio cabinet.
Yes.
That we're planning for.
For APS 4.0.
New studio, yeah.
Because I don't want your standard stuff. Like, yeah, this is a keychain that I got, you know, from, you know, Team USA.
Mm-hmm.
Neat. Whatever. Keep it. I'm happy for you. No. I want, you know, one of those pieces of cardboard from under the bed where the players and athletes aren't supposed to be having sex on them.
Yeah. The anti-sex beds.
I want something off the cuff. And so I want you to know in advance, because you know Greg.
Mm-hmm.
I've never met Greg. I'm going to ask for stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's perfectly acceptable for
garbage
you to do
stuff.
That. Yeah.
Garbage. Again, I'm sure Greg's a nice guy.
He's a great guy.
So I'm very excited to get with him because what an opportunity. I mean,
yeah, it's amazing.
For him to do that, but you know, for us to be able to talk someone on the talk to somebody on the ground,
mm-hmm,
there this year is going to be really neat.
So the reason we had to record this so late is because in Tokyo they're 13 hours ahead of where we are right now.
Yeah,
so we're talking to him at 8 p.m. our time, which is 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah,
his time.
I mean, if you think about it, if there's a chance. I mean, I don't know how those events occur, but things are pretty rigid over there, but there's still a chance that like he could be, hey man, I can't do it. We've got, you know, we're watching this event or we've got this practice now.
Yeah.
And what are we going to, hey, no. And then we sat here and recorded on a Sunday night at 8 o'clock.
Right, we could have recorded 5 hours ago.
And then maybe we could just
I could be getting ready for bed now.
Yeah.
Like I normally am.
Maybe we could just watch the Olympics while it happens.
Yeah. Have you been watching much?
Not much. We turn it on. I've been, it's everywhere. So it wasn't that long ago that the Olympics felt like still so much of it, the only way you could watch was on tape delay.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it's still like, especially with Tokyo this year, I'm assuming a lot of it is.
Well, but it doesn't have to be. That's
right.
What I mean. I mean, 40 years ago, they talk about the Miracle on Ice. That was all tape delay unless you were live in person.
Yeah.
And
that's
the way
crazy.
News traveled then, nobody really knew until it was televised.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like even 8, 12, 16 years ago, networks were saying, we're only showing the men's 100-yard dash
right
live in prime time on NBC But now NBC has their own streaming service. They have more than five channels that they can put this stuff mm-hmm. on. You can find every event as it's happening. So I've been dabbling in handball.
Oh, yeah.
Men's volleyball, women's beach volleyball,
mm-hmm.
Which I have questions about. Women's beach volleyball. I talked about this at length with...
Specifically questions about women's beach volleyball?
Yeah, because I don't think it's fair to them. And I shouldn't say that without having spoken to any of the women's beach volleyball participants.
Mm-hmm.
But you watch those events, and they are wearing bathing suits that are less than bathing suits you see on a beach.
Yeah,
and
that's been an issue.
So I started reading about it, and it seems like the entire team, so not just the twosome that are on the beach, but like my interpretation would be every athlete in that area for country A has to agree on a certain outfit.
Yeah.
And now they have an outfit that is, you know, almost a long sleeve, and like they look like leggings, and mm-hmm. you know, you're on the beach, so there's sand, you don't really want that. But it feels like there was a nice halfway option of like bike shorts and a shorter top.
Yeah.
Obviously I don't know the competitive advantages or disadvantages or,
yeah, who
you
knows?
Know, they're used to being on the beach wearing a bathing suit, but I feel like the ones they have to wear, like that's why ratings are high. Let's not kid ourselves
right.
here.
Yeah.
I mean, women's beach volleyball is known as one of the higher rated events in the Olympics,
yeah.
in the Summer Olympics, track and field, because it's, you know, the 10 seconds and it's over. But women's beach volleyball for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you can't be oblivious to the fact that it's because it's the skimpiest bikinis on some of the most athletic people
you'll ever see. People.
Every person there.
Which can be said about 99% of the people competing in the Olympics, men, women, no matter what sport you're doing. Chances are, if you're an Olympic-level athlete, you're a beautiful person.
I had men's powerlifting on this afternoon. I couldn't take my eyes off this guy's quads. Never seen anything like it in my life, Steve.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have been train cars.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I heard a choo-choo when he lifted.
I was watching swimming last night for a while. It was cool to hear
Swimming's exciting.
It was cool to hear Michael Phelps doing play-by-play or doing like commentary on some of the events. It was interesting.
Because
they said that's the first Olympics since 96. That he hasn't participated in.
And I don't look at him as somebody who would make that switch to commentating easily.
No, I'd imagine that they, I would imagine that they asked him because they knew that viewership was going to be down for these.
Right.
Because he wasn't particularly good. I mean, he was fine.
Mm-hmm.
He interjected a few, like, oh, the last 15 meters, that's when they'll really do this, this, or this.
Right.
So that was kind of interesting to know. But
it's this weird fascination, though, with all of sports media, all of them, that they feel like they need that former athlete in there. And in that role, in small doses, that can work.
Mm-hmm.
It's the problem when they try to make Michael Phelps the centerpiece.
Yeah.
That you hear so few stories about people in love with color commentators in sports. The only one I can think of off the top of my head on a national level is Tony Romo.
Yeah.
Who people adore.
Yeah.
Because it's a totally different set of talent than to be able to swim fast with your gangly monkey arms. Than to be able to know the ins and outs of broadcasting and where you're supposed to be talking and where you're not supposed to be talking.
Right.
It's a very fine line, but you're right. If you're the NBC, you pay billions of dollars for the Olympics. You pay whatever dollar to get the Olympians
mm-hmm.
that United States viewers will know into the TV sets.
Yeah.
It's a smart move, but yeah, it doesn't take long nowadays for the internet to turn a very vile eye towards somebody in broadcasting if they make one mistake or they don't sound the smartest at one thing. So, yeah, that's curious. And it's so weird, though, because we talked about the tape delay. If you're not watching it live, you're watching it at 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these. Women's gymnastics was on at 2 a.m. Eastern Standard last night.
That's crazy.
And it's 13 hours. So for them, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
But that's such a huge event.
Yeah. But I believe they re-aired it, you know, back in prime time, I'm guessing last night.
Yeah,
I didn't see, but That's an event. That's the event that America cares about.
It was funny. I was always watching some of the gymnastics last night. It was the men's. And so they do that thing in every sport where they give the like team profiles and they flash up one of the guys. They're like, his discipline is this and this. And they show him doing his stuff in slow motion. And then they get to the one guy and you hear like the electric guitar, like,
he's the bad boy.
Yeah. And he like turns his head. And it was funny to see him basically, like you just said, be referred to as the bad boy.
He's it.
And then they show him and he's like, I mean, he's doing flips and stuff like dancing around. And I'm like,
he's had two dress code violation and been tardy to three meetings. He's the bad boy, Colton.
Like, what?
It's curious, man. And but yeah, I mean, the Olympics are, I more dabble. I don't get super involved in every event or a lot of the events. It's always neat to see. I like watching, and I'll tune in for a lot of the track and field stuff, but I don't follow it in advance at all.
No.
And this year, especially not knowing if it was even going to happen up until a week ago.
Yeah.
Like, is Usain Bolt running still? Is he still
is he
still an athlete?
No clue.
Like in the Olympics? I mean, these aren't names either, and they're not meant to be names for the most part. You know, 98% of Olympians are not your household name like a professional athlete, right?
Except for look, there's one where when I was watching at work the other day, the TV in the studio was tuned to NBC. And we had the opening ceremonies on where they're all marching in. Because it was very strange just watching them walk into
empty arena.
An empty arena.
Yeah.
But there was one name I knew. And by name, I mean not actual name.
Was it shirtless Tongan guy?
Greased up Tonga man. Don't have any idea what event.
What was he back does. Doing?
He was
just carrying.
He was carrying I think he was carrying the flag.
Oh, good for him. He was the star.
I'm not sure. It was 2016.
It was 16.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if he's back competing in whatever event. I feel like it was one of those events.
Or if he's now like the token Tongan guy.
Yeah.
Who I like wonder, he's on Tongan Wheaties. You know, he's doing Tongan Sports Center a couple nights a week.
We're going to have to ask Greg. Because Greg is our
greased up Tongan guy.
He is our because I assume that greased up Tongan man walks around the Olympic Village greased up.
I feel like it doesn't just come off.
Oh God, no!
And why would you? When you look like that, would you? If you look like that, and I don't have my computer with me tonight. My apologies, but I'll try to put this on the poll. If you looked like that, would you ever take the grease off?
Not a chance.
Because. You don't look better if you're not like, you'll never look better than that.
No.
With that grease accentuating every crevice in your 15 pack of abs.
Oh, that's right. Remember this guy? He was in one event in the Summer Olympics in 2016. And then, let's see, I'm pulling up the article right now.
Greased up
taekwondo canoeist and skier. Remember, he attempted to he attempted to qualify for like
the winter
games.
Okay,
as a skier.
Boy,
yeah.
That, I mean, Peter. It's not like. Is it just Tonga?
Is it
the Tongan Islands? Is Tonga an island? Am I even saying it right? Tonga? Tonga. Tonga. Tonga? Tongan. Tongan.
You know, we're just going to have to ask Greg. Greg is our, he's our boots on the ground.
I feel like we just get right into the nitty gritty and be like, so Greg, USA basketball, they lose one to France.
He's a big basketball fan.
Oh, that's so not, he might know that?
He would absolutely.
We've got to find out that he won't know then.
I would have said water polo, but it turns out he's an expert on it.
15 years ago, I would have told you water polo.
But then Greg went and became a water polo expert in the time I haven't seen him.
Steve, I've got a very quick, before we get Greg on the phone, it's kind of a D.I. Kyle success, I guess. but not without some level of failure.
Of course, yeah.
I'd had to replace this for a few years, and I don't know how often you're supposed to, or they do replace mailboxes. What's the lifespan of a mailbox? You recently replaced yours.
Yeah, I had to. Ours
just
was
your
kind
box,
of,
though.
Ours was kind of falling apart. I didn't replace the whole post.
Okay. Is it a 20-year? Is a mailbox a? Is it a 20-year mailbox?
However long it lasts. Like once it started, ours was like an old metal one.
Okay. Yeah, that's what ours is too.
Yeah, ours. It was just like the paint was chipping off. It was rusty in spots. It just looked like crap. So I went out and bought the old plastic one. Of course, I had to make sure it was approved by the general postmaster.
General postmaster doing his job, sitting there in the factory, examining everyone to make sure that door opens and closes before he's giving his stamp of approval to every mailbox. That's our fearless general postmaster doing the Lord's work there for the government.
Right.
So my mailbox for about a year now, I'd noticed, has been really, really wobbly. So the entire structure, not just the box, the box was really old anyway, metal, gray, so there's rust spots, hated it. So the post had been wobbly. I looked at it. I started to lift it. I could have lifted the whole thing out at any point. So I knew, hey, in the spring, obviously it stretched into summer, I need to replace this thing. I'm ready to get a new one. So I'd helped my dad do theirs a few years ago. Bag of concrete, new post, new box, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I finally got off my butt last week when I was at the store and I got the materials. I bought a post, got a box, got new letters, Steve. Mm-hmm. I even got post setting bag of concrete that you don't mix beforehand. It kind of mixes in the hole.
Is that the one where like you roll it over?
And I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
It was a bag. I think it's a pre-mix.
Okay.
So essentially you're adding water in the ground
and
doing it. I even got new reflectors. Okay.
Just in case. Someone is just wildly out of control driving down the road.
I don't know why they're on mailboxes. I knew my old one had them, and they had obviously peeled to uselessness long ago. I had everything. I'd never been more prepared for a DI Kyle project in my life. I wanted to do it today because I knew we didn't really have anything planned this morning because we weren't going to record the podcast. But my wife at 4 o'clock yesterday with a severe thunderstorm warning, Let's just go do it. We don't have anything to do in the morning. Let's just wait. But she walks out there, the tree practically blowing down in our front yard.
It's the best time to do it. You're really going to test the strength of that new mailbox.
I hadn't even looked at general instructions because in my mind, I was going to take the new post, put it in the hole of the old post, pour concrete in there until, a few inches below grass level.
Yeah.
Water, let it set for a second, strap the box on top and be done.
And push a little mulch or dirt up around it.
So I take the post out and I realize the post is, this isn't quite like 6 feet tall like I anticipated it being. So the township says it has to be 40 to 45 inches off the ground.
Of course, of course they have to get involved too.
This thing's like 44 inches tall total.
Mm.
I'm like, well, what is this? Apparently, I bought a fancy newfangled one where it's a piece of metal like rebar.
Oh, yeah.
And you put half of it down in the ground, and then you set the post on top of the other half and hammer that in. So there I am sitting like an idiot, storm bearing down. My wife runs inside because my son wakes up from his nap.
Oh, so she's gone.
I'm sitting there with a yard-long level going like this. Trying to figure out, okay, so the post is level here. The rubber mallet.
Wait, you were putting the level this way on the post?
Yeah, because I knew when I put the box on, the long level, I wanted the box on. I didn't want the box angled downward or upward.
Well, you should have put the level going up and down. That'll tell you if it's level. You just move it from side to side.
No, it has to be right on top. That's the way levels work, Steve.
I don't think that's the way levels work.
I can't believe I have to show you how levels work, Steve. So I'm doing this with one hand, holding the post with the other hand, as I'm taking my rubber mallet, hitting, and the rubber mallet part of said mallet flies across the yard. I say out loud the words, F it! And I leave it, and I screw in the box on top. I go to put the new letters that I bought. I bought four letters. I was like, hey, I know the four numbers. Boop, 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 boop. Didn't realize I bought a black mailbox and black letters. So there I was making trip number two for a mailbox to the store today, Steve.
Okay.
To get white letters for my black mailbox that is probably going to blow over if a breeze hits it wrong way.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's
I can't tell you how happy I was before this. I mean, I thought I nailed it. I thought, I've got every tool plus some that I need.
But that's
for
always
this.
How it is, man. That's always how
it's
it is.
It's just infuriating. This was so simple. My old mailbox came up, honest to God, like a knife through butter. It was nothing. And the bottom was rotted away into a near dagger.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm glad you let me get that off my chest.
Hey, I'm happy to let you. You know,
I feel like I should have saved it so we could have expounded on a little bit more next week. Because,
that's all right.
Because we've got to get your buddy Greg on the phone.
Yeah, we want to get Greg Meskel on the phone. Let's give him a call right now.
Live from Tokyo,
yeah.
Hello?
Greg Meskel.
Steve McKiernan, what's up, man?
It's been a few minutes since we've talked last, hasn't it?
Just a couple, yeah. Just a few. I was trying to think of the last time I talked to you, and then I just started getting sad, so I stopped the exercise.
Now, Greg, first of all, welcome to the Steve and Kyle podcast. I want to run down your list of accolades, I guess we could say, your resume.
Okay.
As you're talking to us again, live from Tokyo, so it's what, 9 a.m. in Tokyo, right?
9 a.m., and the dates, they get away from you here. But 9 a.m. on Monday morning, yeah.
Okay, 9 a.m. Monday morning.
Yeah.
It is 8 p.m. Sunday night here. So you sent this to me last night. Now, you've called events for ESPN, the Pac-12 Network, the Olympic Channel, NBC Sports Network, Big Ten Network. You're the voice of the Fan-Controlled Football League on Twitch, which is really cool. You're the voice of Manhattan College football or Manhattan College men's basketball on ESPN3, ESPN+. You've served as a reporter and play-by-play for Westwood One, NBC Radio. At the 2018 Winter Olympics in South Korea, you've called a ton of water polo events for the national team, NCAA championship, world championships, etc. Now, you sent me all that, but you forgot to include that you are a college friend of mine, and I'm a little disappointed about that. Where would that rank on that list?
I figured you had that part down, so that was the one thing you did know, and then I would give you the rest. That's way up there. You know, it was like talking to Sean White and then knowing Steve McKiernan. Those were like neck and neck.
So you're at the Olympics, man. How cool is that? This is what, your fifth Olympics?
Fifth Olympics overall. It's very cool. It's certainly a strange one with no fans and all the different protocols in place, but I think everyone that's here would tell you that they feel fortunate to be able to take part in such an oddly historic event. I mean, the Olympics are such an amazing experience to begin with. Anytime you can go to one, and I always tell people if they can get to one, do it. It's just an awesome sports experience, an awesome cultural experience, all of that. But yeah, it's strange just being at venues, and you really hear everything because there's just media there and just other essential staff. And so that's been different. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, as we progress and more medals are won. Those are those really big Olympic moments where there's not the reaction of the fans, the family, that sort of stuff. So I think that's going to be a very different feel, certainly as a spectator media member, but then especially, I think, for the athletes.
Yeah, Greg, this is Kyle. Glad to have you on. Thrilled to talk to you. Steve was telling me before we started recording, you never touched water polo in college.
That I know. I said, to be fair, I said not
correct.
That I know.
Sorry.
I'm confident in saying that you weren't a big water polo fan when I knew you, correct?
This is an accurate statement, and I'm good to be with you as well. So
how do you get there?
Jersey, that's a question I get asked often, and you know, now the running joke is I've known the sport for so long that I just claim I played for a program that no longer exists. You know, the old Bearcats, they got cut a couple of years ago. Remember them? Very limited water polo knowledge. So I was a pool lifeguard as a teenager and early years of college. And at this community pool in New Jersey, they played water polo in like the rec hour, like 4 p.m. every afternoon. But that was really all I knew. And knowing what I know now, that was not really water polo. That was, I don't know, 50 kids in the dive tank just pegging each other with a volleyball.
Basically dodgeball in a pool.
Exactly. So really random journey. After college, I had worked behind the scenes in a bunch of TV networks, but I was also doing play-by-play for Wagner College football and basketball. And then I was there a couple of years, and they needed help in their sports information department. And it was a chance to go and be a GA and get a master's and work for them while also still doing everything else I was doing, the radio broadcasting and working in TV. And when I was there, everyone gets assigned sports. And it's just funny, like fateful decisions, right, that yeah. you would never know where they'll lead you. But they had said, okay, you're going to do, you know, everyone helps out in football. You're going to do swimming. You're going to do track and field. And then you can do wrestling or water polo. What do you think? And I had met the water polo coach, seemed like a nice guy. And I was like, oh, that seems fun. I'm already doing the aquatics thing already with swimming.
Yeah.
So I'll do that. And that was like a 2-year crash course in understanding the sport. And it was a good team on the East Coast. And they made the NCAA championships and got to kind of, you know, see that level of it. And I finished with that 1 year. And the next year I was at the Olympic Games. And
that's
it was
so crazy.
Wow.
And it was weird to go from that level to then the most elite level. And it's been kind of a journey since. And, you know, I can belabor you guys more about this, but it's just kind of been a weird run of kind of doing that. And then through that sport, and you guys know, working in media, like there's no one path to getting to where you want to go.
Yeah. Everyone's different.
Everyone's different. That kind of allowed me to route back into the broadcasting and actually get opportunities that I don't know I would have gotten if I had just stayed in the football basketball world, which is where a lot of people reside. So, yeah.
So do you think
strange journey?
Could you say that you probably benefited from the fact that there isn't a ton? I mean, let's be honest, there's not a ton of focus on water polo in this country. Mm. So, I mean, if you can get in, it's not really a surprise that you elevated so quickly.
No, you're exactly right. There's not a lot of people doing it. Now the one downside is, right, there's not a lot of coverage for it. So if you're into broadcasting, that sort of thing, there aren't a ton of opportunities. But one of the good things that was helpful about it is that the events that were getting on television and were getting streamed, that sort of thing, I started to get into those, and then those places did other sports. And so, okay. You know, I'd had a history of doing other things before water polo, football, basketball, like we're talking about. So it was like, hey, I can also do this. And so that was kind of a roundabout way to getting some of those chances that if I had just said, hey, this is what I do, you know, it's with hiring and all that stuff, I think people want to have confidence that someone can do it and they kind of want to have seen their work a bit. And so it's a little bit more translatable if they've seen you kind of do something else before you're kind of just coming in cold.
Sure.
Can you tell us a little bit about Olympic Village and kind of the differences, obviously the massive differences between now and the other Olympics you've been to, because it just doesn't seem like this joyful, fun experience that you hear about in the media all the time for the athletes as well as you guys.
Yeah, I think that the people that are in the Village now, it seems like they're having a good time. Media aren't allowed to stay in the Village. And so typically in past Olympic Games, a little bit easier to be able to go visit the Village and see what that's like. But obviously with COVID, they've really restricted that access. So there's not even what they would call like a day pass to go in there and see. Mm-hmm. So I think there's just a lot of restrictions in place for everybody to try and, you know, keep that social distance, make sure you're wearing your mask, you know, you're doing your testing, all of that stuff. So that stuff just inherently takes a little bit of the energy out of it. You know, if you're kind of having that in the back of your mind, especially for the athletes, and you've seen it already with a couple having positive tests, that would be a nightmare I can't even imagine. I mean, to put all of this time and effort in, and then you get somewhere and, you know, even if you're vaccinated, right, you can still test positive, and that kind of could potentially end your Olympic journey, especially if you're not a long-term sport, right? If you're not a team sport that's playing the entire Olympic Games, you're pretty much done.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to get a chance to play or compete, and you've worked so hard at that. So I could see why there might be a little like walking on eggshells for some of these people. I know for me, I'd want to be like wrapped in bubble tape, like stay away from me until do my event, and then we can hang out.
Kind of speaking to that, what was the process like, kind of those 2 weeks leading up to you leaving for Tokyo? And then what was it like getting there? Was there more strict, hey, that you need another test when you land type of thing? What was that process like for you before even getting there?
Yeah, tons of protocols. So, you know, obviously they want you monitoring your own health in the lead up, you know, if you're not feeling well, that sort of stuff. You had to take two tests, 96 hours out and 72 hours out, that were done kind of on your own, you know, but they reported, and it had to, you had to have like official documentation. It couldn't be like a thing where it's like, yeah, I got it from CVS and it's fine.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you get to the airport, obviously you have to have all that documentation with you. I mean, so much paperwork, like just papers and papers and copies of those papers. And then the flight itself, largely uneventful. But then when you land again, additional screening. So again, you're showing this documentation a lot. You're getting temperature check. You're doing another COVID test at the airport. And so it's been a fun, you know, little parlor game. Hey, how long did it take you to get out of the airport? Because it's ranged from like 3 on the fast side to like 8 to 10 on the slow side.
How was yours?
I was somewhere in the landed at 4 p.m. and I was at a hotel a little before midnight, and I consider that a win.
That's like, not bad.
I was like, if I can get out of here and get to that hotel like in like 8 hour shot, that's like not terrible. 6-8 hours.
Yeah, so. That's not the worst. So what, you've been there for what, about 4 days at this point, 3-4 days?
You know, I was just looking at that. So I left on a Monday. It is a Monday. I mean, let's call it 6 days.
So yeah, because you kind of lose a day in there. So what have what now when you're not working, because you're doing basically you do like press work for the water polo team, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Just, you know, lots of social media coverage of them and, you know, kind of sharing photos and helping facilitate interviews, that sort of stuff for them. We went a couple of press conferences before the game started. So all that sort of thing.
So in your downtime, if you have any, you may not have any at all, but do you get to go to other events?
Yes. And so I actually just went and saw, unfortunately, the men's basketball loss to France last night, which was the first men's loss at the Olympics since 2004, I believe.
25 in a row.
Yeah. They had been doing quite well. So although France, a lot of NBA guys on that team. So it's not, you know, it's not a, like it's a group of slouches. But to your point, and this goes for any Olympic Games, you can typically go and see other stuff, but it's very calculated. So, you know, you only have so much time. It's a very busy schedule. So you're always looking at days and trying to look ahead a few days and say like, okay, do I have 3 hours there, 4 hours there where I can kind of go and do something or go see something and then kind of get back to what we're doing. And so we had an earlier game yesterday and that, you know, that worked out for last night. Also, it helped. It was a very late start. It was a 9 p.m. start. So that's typical, different here. Again, more procedures in place due to COVID. So you could typically just go to certain events. There's a reservation system in now to ensure that events aren't overwhelmed with people. Cause again, sure. They really want to create great distance and, you know, all that sort of thing. So, that's the one wrinkle in that, in the past, you should be able to look at the schedule and just say, I'm going to go into this and then I'm going to walk over there and come back to this. You know, you can knock out 3 things in an hour if all the venues were closed. And so that's a little bit of a different challenge. You have to even be more of a planner this time around.
Is there anything specific you're looking forward to going and seeing? Cause I know that you're a basketball fan, so I'm assuming you were looking forward to last night's game.
Totally. Yeah. So I always try and see at least a basketball game. I'd like to go see a women's game as well. Swimming is next to water polo, so if I can get over to there, that's always usually a fun environment, and there's so many strong athletes. And then just something, you know, maybe I haven't seen before. I was talking with some other people that are here that judo, the competition for judo, is in a really historic facility here in Tokyo, and kind of part of the origins of the sport. And so that might be a cool thing to check out that I've never seen in person. So that's one of the fun things about the games is that you can go and see things that maybe you didn't know a whole lot about, and suddenly you're a heavily invested fan in what's happening, and you know, and cheering it on, and quickly learning what's happening, and you know, by the end, you're rooting for someone to win a medal.
You've been there for about 6 days. You mentioned Greg. I forget the exact date it happened. I believe it was Tuesday or Wednesday, where one of the heads of the Olympic Committee for Tokyo came out and mentioned something about, hey, there's still a chance that we might last minute cancel this thing. How close are, I mean, was there any fear among you, any other administration, that this thing's really in danger of actually being canceled?
I didn't personally think so, just because you had so many people already here and the schedules were about to begin. You know, there's competition before the opening ceremony. I know some people think that's when it starts, right? But softball, other things had begun a few days earlier. So, no, I mean, at that point, and And that goes for so many things that we heard over the last few months where there was questions about other games in jeopardy and that sort of thing. And this is so cliche from like an athlete standpoint, but the old control what you can control, and you really do kind of have to just put the horse blinders on and kind of look ahead as if things are going to happen until someone tells you they're not going to happen, because otherwise you could spend all day worrying about what might not be. And that doesn't just go for these Olympics. Every one, maybe save for one of them I've been to, there's been some sort of thing before the games that was going to be the biggest problem. And, oh man, what are we going to do? And then it starts. You guys will recall before Rio, Zika virus, mosquitoes,
yeah,
big deal, mm-hmm, right? Everyone's very concerned. It's going to be a problem. I swear to you, I for 3 weeks, I did not see a mosquito. Not a mosquito, not a bug. Now, I'm sure they were there. I didn't see them. I still have 9 large bottles of like mosquito spray from Amazon that were unused. Like, I came out of that bus in Rio, like, coated in spray, like, ready for battle. I was, like, hosing myself down for the first, like, 2 days. And I'm walking around, and I'm like, either this stuff is really impressive spray,
right,
or there are no bugs. So... but you just don't know until you get there, right? So they, you know, there's an old cliche, right? Like, it's like, you know, the games will take over. It's like once the sports begin, that's, you know, what everyone will kind of focus on, and that's typically what happens. Is people want to see all the athletes do their thing. You know, they're the reason why we're here.
Let's talk overall experiences, Greg. If this is your 5th Olympics, you're in Tokyo. You mentioned Rio. I don't know the other ones that you've been to. How would you rank? What are your top 3 so far? And it might not be fair giving you only a week in Tokyo, but what are your top 3 Olympic experiences so far in your career?
Yeah, well, Kyle, you'll make it easy on me. I'll just take Tokyo out because it's not complete, so I can't judge it. So now we're just looking at 4. So this is challenging because I get asked this a lot, and I say, you know, they're all great in their own way, and it's really true. So the other ones were Pyeongchang 2018 winter, and then London 2012, and then Beijing in 2008. It's super hard to pick all of those. 2008, so memorable because I had never been anywhere. I'd never left the country at all. And so to go to those Olympic Games and to see all of that, like, it's funny now having gone to it afterwards, other games, and there's still things from that first games that are just like burned in my brain that aren't from the other ones. I think because it was such a different cultural experience too, a new language, all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. So that was very cool. I'd probably put that. And then this is no knock on London. I love London, but I think in Rio and in Pyeongchang, I was able to do much more broadcasting, and I was primarily a broadcaster in South Korea, doing reporting and a little bit of play-by-play. And you know, that's really the first love for me. So I think that was probably my favorite, if I like a 2018, just from a professional standpoint of like, this is what I love to do. And I was able to do it, you know, amongst the best athletes in the world. So that's probably what I would put first if I had to. And then maybe Beijing second, just because it was that kind of first experience. And then Rio is just such a beautiful place, you know. So
take that, London.
It's hard though. Yeah, exactly. Yes, this is my anti-London problem.
I'm glad you were finally able to get that out there because you know, everybody was wondering.
I've been sitting on that for a while.
Now, for me, there's been kind of 3 storylines for the Olympics. 1, will they actually happen or not? 2 is during the opening ceremonies the other day, when Hot Tongan Man walked in with his body all greased up again. What was the... Everyone had to be talking about it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's the talk of the town, right?
Well, so... And I have to look up his name, but...
It's PETA something.
He's a returner, so he has done this in the past.
Yeah.
And I want to say he also was at the Winter Games in
a
different sport.
Yeah, he was. We were talking about this beforehand. It's such a crazy story. He was the flag bearer at the 2016 games, the 2016 summer games. He walked in shirt off, greased up. And I mean, the internet immediately blew up. And then I think that in like a year's time, he decided I want to do that again and took up skiing and tried to qualify for the 2018 games.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that when he came out in 2016, you know, and it's obviously a different scene because there was fans there and just kind of the reaction, but it was, you know, as someone who loved some WWF back in the day, very reminiscent of like
oh
the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah, amazing.
Where, you know, someone you know, just kind of cruising out to the ring, glistening, you know, like the Hulkster. So, he's clearly a showman, you know, he knows what to do. You know, that event is time to show out, right? You see all the different outfits and what everyone puts on. And
yeah,
it's like, like a red carpet when everyone judges the fact and everything like that. So, I applaud him, you know, getting the name out there for his country and for himself. And, hopefully we'll see him maybe in Beijing in only a couple of months for the Winter Games, or perhaps in Paris, and he can try and one up his whole show somehow.
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about it before, if either of us looked even remotely as good as him, it's like the old, if you've got it, flaunt it. Why not?
I would never wear a shirt, Greg. I would never wear a shirt.
No. You know, not even in those cold winters. Just go out there and just flaunt it. I mean, you deserved it. You earned it.
And this is an assumption on my part, but probably not pants either.
No, definitely not.
You may run into some legal issues, but again, your choice.
Now, what about the anti-sex beds? That was the big story about the Olympic Village. Everyone talking about that too.
Talking about it in the sense that it's not true. You know, so it was another one of those. It was another one of those things that had to be quickly debunked. You know, this was an original. You know, the Olympics, especially here, they put a big focus on. Sustainability, right? And recycling and all of that stuff. And so that those beds, I want to say, were really announced in 2019 or 2020. You know, as like, hey, these are going to be the perfect sustainable, you know, recyclable beds, you know, cardboard frames, right? And it's not like the box or TV came in, right? It's not going to fall apart
right
immediately. But of course, you know, some enterprising journalist on the internet, or I don't know, someone who just shares memes or whatever, put that out there, just looked at it and was like, oh, this is clearly designed so that no one spends time together, you know, outside of the competition. It's like, that's just not the case. And so you've seen some really funny videos. I think the U.S. Women's rugby team did a video on TikTok of them doing all these different poses on the bed, like, you know, jumping around and showing how it could withstand all this force. So it's classic. You know, it's just you get people looking for stories that are all over the place. And this was one of them. And, you know, and then, of course, it only took a couple of days and everyone was like, wait a minute. We did a single Google search. It turns out they announced these beds 2 years ago and they're for the environment.
Yeah.
I'm glad Steve mentioned it. I'm glad that door has been cracked open, because you've been to five Olympics like you talk about. You can't shut up about it.
Go ahead, Kyle. Proceed.
And it's lore almost among hearing about Olympic villages and Olympics about the athletes and how they just go wild. All of them have sex with all of the other ones.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you can speak to? Obviously not specifically seeing or whatever. Is that something that's talked about, or that you've, you know, kind of overheard, like, yeah, that's kind of true, or no, that's totally false?
Well, first of all, your numbers don't add up. It's not possible for all the athletes to have sex with all the other athletes.
No. I've done the math, Greg.
Anything is possible, Greg. Anything's possible. Yeah.
I see how long those power lifters work, Greg. It's not long, okay? It leaves a lot of time for those the anti-boning beds.
I mean, I'm going to give you guys a very boring answer in that. This is because I have never stayed in a village, so I have never, you know, heard of that. Look, I've also always been around a team sport, and they are competing the entire time. So they're very focused on their competition. They're, you know, they start play the day they get there, and they finish really the day the Olympics ends. And so it might be a different story for lots of individual athletes. And then I'll tell you too, you know, kind of being in that media journalist role, this is typically not a story that's getting volunteered to me, right? So,
where's the media guy? We got to tell him about sex.
Greg, you're not going to believe who I hooked up with.
Yeah, that's just, you know, I'm the last person that's getting told about any of that. So if that stuff is happening, they're sharing those details with someone else.
I want to talk a little bit about fan-controlled football that you're a part of, because what a fascinating phenom that appears to have come out of nowhere in the last few years, and now this past year attracting kind of NFL, well, former NFL players is the best way to phrase them. Johnny Manziel, Josh Gordon. What has that been like for you? Because what a weird new venture, but it seems to have some capital and some real legs behind it. I mean, the ownership has Marshawn Lynch and, I mean, other star athletes. Mm-hmm. What a weird adventure. Can you kind of explain or quickly run down how it works?
Yeah, it was such a cool experience. Season one, we're excited for season two. Details on that haven't been announced yet, but, you know, looking forward to when that takes place. But four founders. One of them, Ray Austin, played the NFL for a couple of years. This was kind of their vision. They all kind of got together, Sohrab, Grant Patrick, the other three, all kind of brought different skill sets to come together, you know, almost like the old Captain Planet cartoon. When their powers combine, right, we get fan-controlled football. So it's a mix of live-action football and video games. So it really appeals to the esports community, but also the person that loves football. Essentially, this past season, four teams, it's indoor arena football, 50-yard field. And as a fan, if you want to be fully involved, you could just watch and just enjoy the football. But as a fan, if you want to be fully involved and play, you download their app or you install an extension on your Twitch screen, and you pick one team. That's your team that you root for. And when that team is on offense, you're calling the plays. And majority wins on the play that they run. And so you get points if the play is successful. If you're smart enough to pick a play that didn't work, so they didn't use your play call and it was a dud, you get points for that too, for being smarter than the rest of the crowd. And so that's how kind of what we call fan IQ would grow throughout the season. And so that combined with some really exciting finishes, some well-known names, Johnny Manziel, Josh Gordon, you guys mentioned them, and then some people that maybe people hadn't heard of, but really uses the chance to shine. There's a great receiver, Travis Toivonen. He parlayed this into a contract with the Seahawks. So there's people that use this as kind of a great springboard for the next thing, or maybe they'll be back next season. And it was just kind of the mix of all of that. And then you add in the element of the Twitch chat, which as a broadcaster, I hadn't done a lot of, you know, typically on network stuff, you're not getting that instant feedback. Maybe someone's texting you or something, you're getting tweeted at, but this is just this stream of comments that is moving so fast. It's really hard to kind of pick off what's being said, but you kind of go back and look through. And so to get that instant feedback was also super interesting. I don't know if you guys on your, you know, show, it'd be interesting, right, to have someone literally constantly telling you, no, not that. Hey, what about this?
Yeah.
No, that was dumb. Wait, Steve, why? You know, so that was kind of interesting to see. You kind of take it with a grain of salt, but all of that mixed together, like new next level sort of broadcast. And the feedback was great. Our viewership rose every week over week. And then we had a really great pop for the championship. So it was awesome.
How frustrating is it to the players when the fans who think that they're experts, because, I mean, let's face it, it's people who play video games, it's people who watch sports, it's fantasy football fans, not necessarily anyone that's actually played the sport before, but was there ever a time where you could sense the frustration from the players because the fans made a stupid choice?
Well, it was funny early on, and, you know, then fans, I think, acclimated and figured it out and leveled out the balance on their play calling, because remember, they're only calling offense. But there is a hot mic booth, the Wendy's hot mic booth, in the corner of the end zone that players kind of go into after touchdowns, just whenever they wanted to go say something. And early on, it was so pass heavy. You had some of the running backs, they would just be like, please run the ball. Run, pick any run. Any run at all. Give us a chance, you know.
And like every play can't be a flea flicker.
It can't always just be drop back pass, you know. And then eventually you saw the teams that really balanced that out. And it was interesting to see which teams took on a real community approach where they, you know, they really were like collaborating on like, okay, what's our strategy? Which I, you know, that's a challenge in itself. And it ended up being a team that won the title, the Wild Aces. Greg Miller and his crew, they did a great job of kind of organizing, okay, this is the type of football we want to play. And this is, you know, what do you guys think about this or that? And really kind of coalesced into a virtual team, if you will, kind of selecting what they wanted to do going forward. And it was really funny to see it kind of evolve over time.
It's funny because on my actual job on the radio show, we played from time to time, we played some highlights from the Fan Controlled Football League throughout the season.
That's awesome.
And at one point we played a clip. I think it was like one of the Johnny Manziel clips or something. And I'm listening to it and I'm like, wait a minute, I know that voice. And then I go back and I realize it, like the exact clip that we're playing, you had just posted on your Facebook page earlier in the day. And I'm like, oh my God, that's great. It's Greg. I know this guy. And it's weird because I have like this odd sense of pride because I know that guy and he's doing good things. And we went to school together and it was one of those really cool moments to hear.
Oh no, totally. I think I feel the same way. I see all the stuff that you post and it's cool. And you've been it long enough to know now, and you know all the people that we came up with. It's a battle of attrition to kind of keep it going in this. So you know how many people that were good at this, and it, you know, for whatever reason, it just didn't work out, yeah. or you know, they had to go in a different direction. And so, when someone's able to kind of stay in there and make this thing happen, I think we all feel like a collective sense of like, all right, that's great. That's like good for us and good for them.
Yeah, like you said, the numbers are definitely dwindling because we graduated nearly 20 years ago, like 18, 19 years ago, whatever it was. And I mean, I can count on one hand the amount of people that are still in the broadcast field. So when I see somebody doing cool things, it's really cool to hear.
Yeah, no, same. It's a battle, you know. It's you have to stay in there and hope. Just keep on hoping it's gonna work out.
Yeah,
right. Well, one of you is in Tokyo at their fifth Olympics, so we can't hear the end about it.
Yeah, and the other one is sitting in my basement talking to the guy that's at the Olympics.
Hey, you know, everyone's working from home now, guys. Your basement would be a fantastic place to be.
Greg, before we get you out of here, man, we know you probably have a busy day over there. The niceties are over. All right. You've been to five Olympics.
Boy.
Again, you don't shut the hell up about it. You're a recognizable face.
Picking up some hostility here.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I see you've met Kyle.
Yeah.
You're a recognizable face, so, you know, you can probably get into rooms that, you know, a lot of times, years ago, people would have given you a second glance and, hey, who's that guy? What does he think he's doing? Can I ask you just one favor? We would like, from the Tokyo Olympics 2020/2021, some type of trinket. Maybe it's something that you've grabbed while you're there. Maybe it's something they gave you. What my dream is, because again, it's in the news. I feel like every Olympics they talk about, oh, they're distributing 500,000 condoms to all the athletes. I want an Olympic ring branded condom if you could get your hands on one of those. Or, you know, some other trinket that you take. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to discard this because I don't want to travel with it, you know, across the globe.
Yeah, I mean, maybe an anti-sex bed. If you can get us one of them,
yeah.
If you can fit it in your carry-on, we'd appreciate that.
I mean, I think we've covered those. They're going to be recycled. They're not going to be available. It would be very unsustainable for me to take one, bring it all the way home, and then try and recycle it there.
That'd look really cool in the corner of our studio, though, Greg. I mean, really cool.
What Kyle would do with it. So, yes, Kyle, I think your long-winded way of asking for a souvenir, no problem, good sir.
We don't want a lanyard, you know, because I feel like you could get that off of eBay for a few bucks. Because again, that's something that you're going to discard anyway, right? I mean, do you have keepsakes from all of your Olympics that you've worked?
Yeah, there's something I try and keep from everyone. You know, pins are a big deal at the Olympics, and
really?
That has kind of been pin trading and the pin culture of the Olympics, and it's taken a hit this time with no fans. That is a huge part of the Olympic Games. People are rabid to collect and try and get unique ones, and so a pin from this Olympic Games, that might be considered a rare item to have. So I have some of those.
Ooh.
I would be happy to hold one of those for you, and then if I see anything else random, non-sex related, sorry to disappoint you, I will see what I can do to bring that back to you.
Look, don't say non-sex related. It could just happen. I mean, look. Keep the possibility open. It could possibly happen. If you happen to walk past a bowl of Olympic-branded condoms, reach in there, grab a couple of them, and send them our way, okay?
This has been noted.
Or, again, don't rule it out. You know, if you run into one of those cardboard disasters, just throw that over your shoulder on your way to the airport. Bring her on home as a carry-on, a personal item.
Yeah, that'll definitely fit in the overhead compartment.
Well, Greg,
I see you haven't left that basement much.
No, not at all. We've been in here for a year and a half. We need something to do.
I hope someone has a window or at least get some sunlight to get some food and drinks down there for you guys.
Well, Greg, this is the point in the interview where we would cue up the Olympic theme music, but I'm pretty sure that that is not Creative Commons.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that that is a copyrighted piece of... Greg Meskel, everybody.
Greg, where can people find you? If you're, I know you're doing a lot of press work for, I'm assuming it's all of Team USA and the water polo team. Where can people find you to see what you're putting out there right now while you're in Tokyo?
Yeah, good place. Twitter or Instagram at Greg Meskel on Twitter. And then the very creative at Mescalade on Instagram.
Mescalade.
Which is like Escalade by my last name.
we'll make sure those will be in the show notes for everybody as well. Please follow along, Greg, in Tokyo. Again, it's fifth Olympics, and good God, we may never hear the end of it.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Dude, thank
And
you. It was great.
Kyle, yeah, it's been a thrill to just learn your heartwarming personality. Steve, always a pleasure to chat with you as well.
Man, it's been great to talk to you. I hope to actually see you in person at some point soon, once the world somewhat returns to normal.
Yes, we're long overdue for a nice West Long Branch reunion.
Oh, definitely. Yes. Can't wait. Yeah. All right, man. It was great to talk to you. Be safe over there, all right?
All right, guys. Take care.
Take Thanks, care. Rick. Man, he is a good guy.
Kind of a dick about the Olympics, huh?
Wouldn't shut up about it.
What a weird thing to...
Hey, we're inviting you on to talk about this thing, but when you talk about that thing, we're just going to drag you for talking about that thing that we asked you to talk about.
See, everybody, the key to that joke is that he only mentioned he'd done 5 Olympics once.
Actually, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it. Yeah, I don't even know if
yeah,
he did.
Yeah, you may have. You may have.
Oh, man, what a good dude. I love that guy.
I still have a litany of questions, one about fan control football still, but
yeah,
you know, I could have talked to him again, but I feel like it's my way with everybody we talk about is,
yeah.
I mean, the food options, like what do they do? Is it cafeteria style? Is it like cuisine or is it garbage? You know, what are people,
yeah, these
what are people
things
craving
were,
over
like
there?
Emeril is there cooking
yeah.
for everybody. Or...
I just have so many questions and that it's such a fascinating experience that it's hard for me to overlook the Olympics when they depart because when they depart, they leave a wake of debt, devastation, and empty buildings in every town they go to.
Yeah.
But while they're there, people are so enamored with it. And it's the pomp and circumstance of it all, you know?
It's the world stage.
It is. I mean,
everybody's watching for that couple of weeks.
Yeah. And it's so neat to see. I mean, you've been in some of those scenarios. I mean, you were at the wedding, the royal wedding, however many years ago that was. It's so weird the way the world latches onto some certain things, you know, but very, very cool to be able to talk to Greg live on the scene in Tokyo. I'd love to get him on another. I mean, you knew him in college, which means I have to ask him a million questions about your college experience.
Oh, sure. Yeah. He's a good source. He's a good wealth of information.
I mean, I don't think he was underwear wrestling.
He was not. He was not part of the infamous
group
underwear wrestling.
Right.
Not underwear, to be clear, once again.
History has held that in place, that was underwear wrestling when a neighbor girl ran in and you sprinted upstairs hoping nobody saw you.
Oh, God. Ugh, just thinking about that. Not one of my prouder moments.
Outstanding. That
not
was,
one of my prouder moments at all. Now, we had talked about possibly doing a...
Yeah.
All right. We had talked about possibly playing the outro music.
Which we will possibly talk about doing again next week. And next week we should have another guest on the interview we had scheduled for this week that we had to reschedule presumably will be next week. I'm not going to guarantee that. So the run continues here.
Yeah, again, you can find Greg at Greg Meskel on Twitter and Instagram. Did he say? I'm not sure which
Mescalade
one.
On Instagram.
Mescalade is on Instagram. And now it's Mescall. Greg with 1 G. So you can kind of follow along. I know he's posting a lot of stuff about what's going on at the Olympics. It's a cool insider view.
Yeah.
Of the biggest event in the world.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fascinating experience to be to any of them, let alone 5 different experiences of varying involvement, you know, that you kind of get to see the ins and outs.
So big thanks to Greg for taking the time. Can't imagine he has a lot of free time during the Olympics. So good to talk to him again, an old college buddy
coming through in the clutch.
Nostalgia. But I was serious though when we played a clip of him on the radio show a couple months ago. I was like,
wait,
that's amazing! It's so cool to see
what
somebody
a neat way to remember
somebody
to find out.
Somebody doing so well. So big thanks to Greg at Steve and Kyle, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We will talk to you next week.
See ya.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.